Kim's hooking.
I'm gonna pull the mic closer to you.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Hello.
What are you doing?
That is what they call. There are a lot of people that crochet.
Hookers?
Call each other hookers, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm in quite a few different groups on Facebook.
Kim's working on the blanket she's going to be giving away on Patreon.
I like to say my best friend is an avid hooker.
How far along? Oh, I like the orange.
Doesn't it really outline. Make it pop?
It yes, does.
I like that.
I'm going to do a couple rows of this color and then do a couple rows of the green and a couple rows of the blue. And then I'll start the flowers. Mm. And the flowers, I'm going to... The flowers, they'll have a green center and then blue on the outside.
Oh, nice.
Or no, green center and an orange.
That looks nice. How much longer is it going to take you to finish it?
Considering I'm working all of the damn time.
Well, if you would
I don't not. Know when I'm going to get this thing done.
You've gotten really far. It's a big blanket.
It is very big.
It looks really nice, though. It looks really soft.
It is very, very soft. I love this yarn. I've used this type of yarn on...
Fuzzy.
Other things. It is a little fussy, but
no, I like fuzzy, that. Yes.
Get your hug out your mouth.
I love this. It's kind of shiny and really super soft. Mm. And
Kim is so easygoing. Her only complaint is the American Kennel Club hasn't classified her as a breed yet. I've been sitting on that one for just the right time to use it.
I don't know where you get this shit from, I swear.
So, Kim, why don't you tell our friends, while we're talking about your blanket, how they can win this blanket.
Okay, you want to win my beautiful blanket that I'm sitting
you've been working
here
real hard make, on.
That I've worked so hard on. You started so it
when we were
on.
Going to Texas.
Yeah, I started it right before we went to Texas.
And you worked on it the entire drive.
The entire drive there and the entire drive home.
This blanket has been across America.
Yep, it's been across from Indiana to Texas.
And back.
So if you want to try to win this blanket, all you have to do is go to Patreon, become our Patreon, and then you comment on the post that we make that you want us to do our live game night.
Dun, dun, dun.
Once we get 15 new Patreons, we'll announce a date for our game night. And a winner in that game night is going to win my blanket.
There you go. Better have my blanket.
Well, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's a nice blanket.
The only complaint I have about it is... It's,
she got to find a complaint. I she got to find something to complain about.
It's a little, it's staticky. I think it's just because of the weather, too.
You just throw it in the dryer with one of those dryer sheets.
I love it.
I learned all kinds of tricks. Do you wash your yarn before you use it?
I do not.
I learned I didn't know that was a thing either. You just put them in pantyhose and tie it and throw it in the washer and it makes it softer. And that way it doesn't, the pantyhose help it from... I mean, if you just threw a thing of yarn in your washer, it ain't coming out.
No. I mean, I could see that.
Yeah. I'm a knitter.
This is so soft anyway. It doesn't really need to be any softer. It's not so many of those generic, cheap yarns they're really scratchy. Stiff. Stiff. But this is absolutely nothing like this. It's really soft.
Yeah. Someone's going to be really excited when they win.
They will. It's really, I have to say, I am really proud of this one.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It's turned out exactly how I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. So I'm just hoping that the flowers turn out like I want them to. Mm. I did find a pattern for it, but I'm not real sure how big they're going to be once they're finished. Mm. So I may have to recruit someone that is a little bit better at making that type of thing to help me make them as big as I want them to be, about the size of my hand.
You know? My friend Brittany's a a genius hooker.
She's a genius hooker.
She is like,
yeah, I might have to.
She like busts them out too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She made me a Dorothy's Bornak out of crocheted yarn.
Oh my God.
I have a That's Dorothy so funny.
Little doll out of, I also have Medusa. She sells them at little craft fairs and she makes bank. Oh, the last one I went with her, it was at Ball State. They had like a beginning of the year craft fair and she sold just about every single thing she brought.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, get it, girl.
I have it all figured out what I'm going to do for the trip to CrimeCon. I already know what I'll be working on in that one. And I know what I'll be working on when we go to Colorado. Oh,
I'm excited to learn.
You need to make one that looks like blood dripping.
I thought red. About, just because this one has taken so long, I thought about doing like a smaller version of it.
Older.
As, not that small, as a pillow cover and giving away a couple of those because those won't take near as much time as what this one has. But I thought that would be a cool idea as a
I'm just now realizing too. Every woman in my life is a crocheter. Every single one.
Well, you know, they could be addicted to something else. They could be some.
It
you
could
know,
definitely be a lot.
Keep their hands busy so they don't kill.
Yeah.
I've been working so much though lately, especially trying to get caught up from our trip and then the move, and you know, I have really been able to do much crocheting for the last several months. The most I've gotten to do is when we went on our trip, and I loved every second of sitting in that car and just crocheting away. I love to crochet. It's very relaxing.
It was always hilarious, though, whenever she dropped the needle.
Oh, yeah. I'd get so mad.
Why I like to knit. Reach it. It stays on that needle. And it's fun. The way I learned is you stab it, strangle it, scoop out its guts.
Yeah, that's either a TikTok or I've seen it on Facebook, one or the other, but I've seen people do that.
That's hilarious. Kim, I saw on some of the photos that you posted on Patreon that you collect things.
Mm-hmm.
So you collect thimbles
and
you collect magnets.
Yep.
And I wanted to ask you, first of all, what's a thimble? Because I'm not exactly sure what a thimble is. I saw them in the photos and I believe that it's a Monopoly thing.
No.
Oh, my God.
Like a thimble?
It protects your thumb when you're sewing.
Yeah, yes. But isn't it a Monopoly piece?
Yeah.
Well, there is a Monopoly piece that's a thimble, yes.
But it was based off of an actual thimble.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You put them on your finger or your thumb.
So you just collect different thimbles?
Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten any for a really long time. I didn't realize that I did
you
in
had
Vegas.
A lot.
I counted them, and it was like 130 or 140 of them. But I usually collect them whenever we would go places. And I kind of got out of it because they're a little harder to find now than what they were.
They used to be a very common, cheap little souvenir.
Yeah, so I have them that say Tennessee, Texas. Mm. Well, not Texas because I didn't look from there. I didn't think about it.
I see shot glasses now. I don't see thimbles.
Yeah. So they are a little bit harder to find, but I have them from a bunch of different places. Actually, our friend Maya, she brought me a couple from
that's
from
fun.
Norway. And
do you have a favorite thimble?
I do.
What is it?
So I used to get this magazine. I don't know. It must have been like a more popular thing back when I started doing it.
Playgirl?
No. Collecting thimbles, you jerk.
Oh, okay. That kind of magazine.
So
Thimbles Weekly.
I would get this little thin magazine, and they had really cool, unique thimbles.
You bought a thimble out of a magazine?
Yeah. And it's...
I mean, go on.
Yeah, give me your
I've bought more than one from a magazine.
You didn't know.
Tell me, Kim, were you popular in high school?
Kim, you got a boyfriend? You bought them both from a magazine. I'm allowed to go to the bathroom.
You're a dork, Kim, and I love it.
My abs hurt.
Your abs?
Yeah.
What abs you got?
I don't know, but you say it too, so I want to hear it.
I feel attacked. I didn't even say it.
But... Yes, I bought them from a magazine, but it looks like a little castle. And it has a little hinge on it, and the top of it opens. Ooh. And that has two itty bitty little thimbles in there. One of them's a king, God, and one's a queen.
Okay, I would buy that from your a magazine. Your
thimble has thimbles.
Yeah, that's so cute.
How much was it?
Thimbleception.
I don't remember.
1995. How two long payments ago? In 1995.
How long ago was it?
Oh my God, that was before I ever had kids. Because like the cabinet that they're in, my brother, ex-brother-in-law made before he passed away. And Amber was four or five. Oh, yeah. Hmm. No, she was older than that. Emily was 3 when he passed away. Hmm. So... And actually, I think he made that. I know he made that for me before they were ever born, because we still lived in the single wide trailer when he made it. He had made me a different one, but you had to sit it on something, and then he made me a nicer one.
Oh, nice.
So,
your thimbles from the magazine.
I'll have to take a better picture of the.
We really called it with having her be Velma.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Josh said it right this time, Velma.
But
so yeah. I have to tell Josh. So I have to tell our listener who's listening right now. Josh,
our
walked
one
in,
listener.
Yeah, Josh walked in the other day, and he's like, "Have you seen that new Thelma, that new Thelma movie on Netflix?" And I looked at him and I was like, "Velma."
Listen, once I get it, I don't learn Velma names, and once I do, it's just stuck.
He's like,
Velma.
Kim, have you seen it? The Velma movie?
Show. No. It's a series.
It might be on Netflix.
It's actually just about Velma?
Yeah.
The Scooby-Doo Velma?
Yes. It's like the other characters. There's a version of Shaggy, Daphne, and Fred. I haven't seen any Scooby.
It's not animated though, right?
Yes, it's adult animation.
But he didn't know when he was getting in on it.
I was just getting ready to go to bed, and I'm like, oh, I'll watch the new Velma and fall asleep to a little nostalgia. No, right. Nope, it is. Adult situation.
Okay, and you said scene, it was on like, what?
Netflix, I believe.
Okay.
Or it might be one of the HBO, Hulu, or Netflix, one of them. But oh, that's the three that's, I have.
Thanks.
But like the first scene, like she beats the crap out of Daphne, who's naked in the shower and at the school, and like is pounding her face into the floor. And I'm like, this sure ain't like someone.
This ain't my Scooby-Doo.
They find a body in the locker and she falls out and the head comes out and she ain't got a brain. I was like, oh, this ain't what I thought it was. Well, thank I thought God she was just a little bi-curious.
Oh my
God. Thank God it was animated.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, this ain't.
That's crazy.
I watched like 4 or 5 episodes. I mean, I was like, oh, this is kind of funny. I think Mindy Kaling plays Velma, and I enjoyed it. Fred's a little hairless twink. It's funny. He gets put in prison.
Did anybody on Patreon send you pictures of their collections?
No, I haven't gotten them yet. Or they went to my spam folder.
You should probably check that.
Yeah, I check it once a week.
Do you collect anything?
I guess if I'd collect anything, it would be I collect books from when I go places.
Oh, yeah.
So I do have a large collection. I need to get them all in one place. They're kind of scattered. I have them in this drawer and in that drawer and that closet. But I like if I go to a museum or a historical place or a crime place, I always buy a book about the history that happened or whatever happened.
You like to do that too to help just give money to them.
Yeah. But I also like if I... Oh, I've been to that place. I also have a book that I can reference.
Yeah, help you remember.
Yeah, that I can go through and like have photos. And
I always especially like with it when you come back, because I'm like, ooh, because you'll tell me about it. And I'm like, let me, you know, page through this book.
Let me borrow the book.
Especially with a lot of the places that we go to, you know, you use on hometown history.
Yeah. Or I can develop into a history story. Yeah.
That or even a mystery too. Yeah.
So. Well, that's the nice thing is that a lot of times those historical sites, there is some type of mystery story to go with it. So that's also nice. Are you guys ready for me to get into a mystery?
Would you please?
Yes. Okay. Kim has a timer over there. Would you please? Would you please? As she's over there crocheting, would you please?
We're only 15 minutes in, so we're good.
Well, you know me.
Oh, I know you.
You know me with my mysteries. Okay, so today I am taking us back to September 3rd, 1965, to Kensington, North... would you not give me that look, Kim? I'm not going to get this name out. I'm bringing us to Kensington, New Hampshire.
Okay.
Now, this is in the southeast corner of the state. Kensington is a really small town. It's only 5 miles south of Exeter. And specifically, the situation I'm going to be talking about is known as the Exeter Incident. And you'll learn why here in a minute, that although it happens in Kensington, Kensington is a really small town, so everyone just refers to it as a slightly larger town. You know, I think we all kind of know why. It's just we all live in a small town. So.
Right.
So on the early morning hours of 2 a.m., again, September 3rd, 1965, 18-year-old Norman Muscarello, I have no idea if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, Muscarello is my best guess, was hitchhiking home in Exeter on New Hampshire Route 150. Now, he had been visiting with his girlfriend at her parents' house in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Now, that's only 10 miles southeast of Exeter. Now, this is a little funny to me because I think, I don't know if it's just at that time, you know, being 1965, or if it's just me being fat, but he didn't own a car. He didn't own a car. So what he would do is he'd hitchhike to and from Amesbury Ooh. To visit his girlfriend. So one of the problems he had was that because it was so late, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, it's so early, I guess, there wasn't a lot of traffic, so he couldn't find a lot of hitchhiking ability. Like, he couldn't find a lot of cars that he could hitchhike. And also, like, now people, like, know about what is going on with hitchhikers. Right. Like, you're liable to get killed, so people aren't picking people up. So he was having to walk a large portion of those 10 miles or whatever back to his home. So he's out there on the highway walking. And once Norman reached Kensington, which again was a few miles outside of Exeter, he noticed 5 flashing bright red lights off in the distance.
Nope.
I know. At first he thought, oh, those must be emergency lights from like a fire truck or a police car. But as he got closer, he noticed that those lights were moving in the air. And you know, fire trucks and police cars don't do that. And not only that, but they're moving above the trees. Now, the lights are lighting up a nearby field, and they're lighting up 2 homes in this bright red light. Now, one of those houses belonged to the Dining family, and they were not home at that time. The other house belonged to the Russell family. Now, Norman thought the object had to be about 80 to 90 feet wide. Huge object hovering in the sky just above the tree line. It didn't make a sound, so it had no sound to it. And get this, it started moving slowly toward him.
No.
I would freak the F out. That's where they'd find my body.
I'd turn into the Roadrunner.
I mean, I would just, I probably would die. That's where they'd find me.
I wouldn't run. However, I'd walk very quickly.
So he begins to get terrified and he starts to panic. I mean,
understandably.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So he ends up diving into a ditch beside the road, which that's pretty smart. Like, that's what you're supposed to do if you see a tornado.
Right.
And I guess, you know, he's probably trying to hide from this thing. So the object then changes directions and it starts to hover over the Dining family farmhouse. So what Norman does is he runs over to the other house, the Russell family house, and he starts to pound on the door, yelling for help. Now, this kind of makes me laugh. So no one answers the door. There's this huge object above the neighbor's house, you know, and it's flashing lights. Now, the Russells later say they're seeing all this. They're hearing him pound on the door. They're terrified.
Right.
So they're not answering the door.
What the hell's going on?
Yeah. They're seeing the lights. They're hearing him pound on the door, but they're like, we're not dealing with this. And honestly, I don't blame them. I don't think that I'd be answering the door. None of that. Because you don't know if this whatever's outside of that door has something to do with those lights. I mean, we're talking about 2 o'clock in the morning. So they're too afraid to open that door. Well, then the object starts to move slowly away, and then it disappears over the woods. So Norman sees an oncoming car coming up, and he flags them down. He's freaked out, and those people take him to Exeter Police Station. So once Norman's at the police station, he's pale. He's really shaken up. And, you know, it's a small town, but he's explaining to Officer Reginald Toland, who was working the night desk that night, what was going on. Now, that officer, again, it's a small town, so people know each other. The officer knew Norman, and he knew that it was totally out of character for Norman to make stuff up. He's a trustworthy person, and it's not normal for Norman to be scared of anything. You know, Norman is brave enough to be hitchhiking all that distance right. and walking by himself, you know. So, I mean, that's a pretty brave person. So he was really taken aback, and just to see Norman being so fearful and agitated, that was, you know, the officer was really shaken up kind of himself because of how truthful this all was. So the officer ends up radioing another police officer. And that officer's name was Officer Eugene Bertrand Jr. And that officer had earlier driven by a woman, and she seemed to have been frightened in her car when he drove by. So he ends up stopping. This was on New Hampshire 108. Now, when he stopped to ask her if there was a problem, she tells him that she saw a huge object, and it was flashing red lights, and then it followed her car to Exeter from Epping. I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's E-P-P-I-N-G, which is 12 miles away. And she said it was hovering over her car before it flew away, which was terrifying. I mean, I can't imagine. The officer thought, this woman is crazy. Like, you know, she may be high on something. I don't know what's going on. But he did go ahead and stay with her until she was calm enough to drive. But after this officer is there at the police station and hearing what Norman had to say and hearing his story, he decides, well, I'm going to go with Norman back out to the Dining family farm to try to investigate what's going on out there. Like, what is this object? Let's find out. So Officer Bertrand and Norman get out to the farm, and they're in the patrol car, get out to the farm. And from the patrol car, when they first get out there, they don't see anything. They get out, they start heading out, and Norman is explaining what he saw, where he saw it. So they left the car, they're walking towards the field where he last saw the object go over into the woods. And as they approach, they hear the object start coming out. And the object is slowly rising above the trees coming out. Now, Officer Bertrand describes the object as huge. It's a huge, dark object, as big as a barn, with red flashing lights on it. Now, at that point in time, both Norman and the officer can see it. It's moving silently towards them, and it's swaying slightly back and forth just above the tree line. The officer immediately drops to one knee, drew his revolver, and pointed at the object. He's terrified. An object's moving towards them. But then he decides, I don't know what that object is. I don't know how this bullet could affect what's coming towards me. So he decides that that's not how he needs to approach this. He grabs Norman, and they run back to the police car. Once they get to the police car, the officer radioed another policeman. That officer's name was David Hunt. So Officer Hunt, he radios him for backup. Hey, I need your help. We have an object out here. We need immediate backup. So the two wait in the car for help, and they continue watching the object as they're waiting for Officer Hunt to show up. Now, they describe the object. It was hovering 100 feet away, about 100 feet off the ground at that point. It's rocking back and forth. It had flashing red lights. And they're flashing in a rapid sequence from right to left and then left to right. Now, Officer Hunt arrives rather quickly. The object is still there. So he continues to observe, along with the other two, this object as well. So while they're observing it, the object rises over the trees and then disappears in the distance. So it disappears, and as soon as they see it disappear, they hear the sound of a B-47 bomber. Yeah, they hear the sound.
Those are loud as hell.
Yeah, so they hear the sound of a B-47 bomber fly overhead, and they assume, okay, something from the Air Force is coming for that object. But they all said that they could hear the definite difference between the B-47 bomber and the unidentified object that they were seeing, because the object was completely silent and the B-47 bomber was really loud. You know, the engine had a loud engine noise. You hear
it coming from a while away.
Yeah, yeah. And so all three men get back in their vehicles and they drive to the police station and immediately file separate reports on their own about what each of them saw individually. File it with the police station is, you know, immediately what they did. So not only that, not only did these three people, two officers and this third person, see this and report it, and also a large number of people in the extra area also reported to have seen this object. Now, one of those people was someone named Ron Smith. Ron was a senior at Exeter High School. He, his mom, and his aunt saw the object. It was about 11:30 p.m. Suddenly, the three of them all saw the object. It had a red light on top, and they describe it as the bottom was white and it glowed. It appeared to be slightly spinning, and then it passed over the car once, and then it passed over again, and it got in front of them. And then it stopped in midair, and then it went back over the car and disappeared. And this incident has become one of the best documented UFO encounters in history.
Oh, wow.
Because of, you had two police officers who are well-respected police officers in the community, both witness it, along with someone else who is well-respected in the community, Norman. But, I mean, all three of them witness it. Then they immediately go report it to the police, you know, back at the police station. And then a lot of people in the community see the same object, and they're all separately reporting the same thing. So because of that, it's just a well-documented sighting that is amazing just to witness.
Redneck who, they took me up and probed me.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really interesting, and I have a lot more to talk about on the Unmasked episode that I'm really excited to share. And so it's a really good mystery. How I found this mystery is because of my history podcast. I had covered Project Blue Book, and this incident was sent to Project Blue Book
for them
to investigate. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I was looking at some of the cases that Project Blue Book had investigated, and this was one of them. And the instance was so messed up, the officers and Project Blue Book and the Air Force, that there was just a lot of back and forth and a lot of weird things happened. And so I'm going to cover all of that in the Unmasked episode. I'm really excited about it. Yeah.
Nice.
This makes me, this reminds me when you said aliens. I was like, hey, there's aliens in Ohio at that Air Force base. Looked up that museum. It is free to get into.
That's what I thought.
We got to go.
Yeah.
When are we going to go? We should. Let's make a date right
next
now.
Week.
Well, we next can. Week. Do we want to go through a weekday or weekend?
Weekday, so weekday. It's not as busy. Yeah.
Maybe less people.
All right. What day do we want to go?
Yeah, whenever.
Yeah.
We're going.
Let's go next week.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Make a day of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yay.
Mm. We'll post photos on Patreon.
See if we can get some aliens.
Yeah. Here we
That'll
go.
Be fun.
Take them home.
We'll ask them about the Exeter incident. Where in Ohio is it?
Huh?
What town?
Near Dayton.
What town do you know?
Dayton.
Is it in Dayton?
It's right outside of Dayton, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. The incident, this involved an Air Force base in Ohio that was investigating it.
It was probably Dayton.
It's huge.
You talked about Wright-Patterson Air Force Base when you did Blue Book. That's Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Patterson Air Force Base. Yeah. So this is the museum
that's on that base.
Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the one that investigated it. Yeah. So in my Unmasked episode, I'm going to get into how they documented it.
Well, hell yeah. So we're going to this Air Force Base next week.
We're going to ask them. We'll ask them about this incident.
I have a good story about that Air Force Base, actually.
We'll take a picture inside JFK's presidential airplane.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That'd be fun. Years ago, we went as a school field trip, right?
Yeah.
And I think we might have been fifth or sixth grade. We were really young. And after we had walked through the museum, it's a very, very cool museum. They've huge. Got it. It is huge. They have so many really cool airplanes, and it's a very cool museum. So after we got done going through there, and we did go out to the presidential planes on that trip, we come back in and was all of us kids was in the gift shop and was getting ready to buy, you know, stuff at the gift shop. So I had a couple things in my hand and was waiting to check out. And this guy in a uniform, he was a soldier.
Lucky girl.
Yeah, he was in the military.
I love it there.
He walked up to me and he says, I'm getting ready to be deployed over in Europe or someplace. I don't remember what he said.
In the bathroom, baby.
He says, do you mind if I write you every day? I said, nope. And he turned around and he walked away. Didn't get my address or nothing.
It was too still easy. You have to play hard
letter.
To get.
I'm still waiting for that letter. Hot little boy in.
What's
that? Write to me, baby. I'm real descriptive.
Mm. I mean, he could have wrote to me and just, you know, not mailed him, but just made himself feel better for writing to somebody, I guess. But
yeah, we'll be
I
there
just thought
all
it was
day.
So weird.
It's huge. Men in uniform everywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely an all-day event.
I love it.
This is why Josh wants to go.
Mm-hmm. No, I like the museum itself.
We'll pick you up in a couple days, Josh.
I took two of my residents from the nursing home, and it was fascinating because one of them, he was in his 90s, and he fought in World War II. And so he was able to tell, like, I flew a plane just like that. I used to work on the engines. I could probably get that plane up and running if I had the opportunity.
How far is it from your house?
About an hour and a half.
Oh, that's not bad.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, from here, it's like 3 hours and 9 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. It's like going to Dayton's just like going to Indianapolis for me.
Right.
They're both about an hour and a half.
That's the easiest airport around here to get in and out of. It's right off the highway. Nothing else near it.
Dayton?
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to the Dayton airport.
It's smaller, too.
You've never been to that Air Force Museum?
No.
You'll be very impressed.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. All right, well, let's get into my
Shit fire. Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right. So on March 12th of this year, Patricia Royer was at her home in Michigan, enjoying a cup of coffee in the morning. So she was 65. Her and her husband just started playing the Michigan lottery. And so that lottery was called Lucky for Life. And they just started playing it a year prior. So she had won before $200 a few months back. Woo! So she'd been using that money to buy more tickets. Now that morning, she was drinking her coffee. She decided, hey, I'm going to go ahead and log into my account and see if I won anything in last night's drawing. So she logs in and it said, congratulations, you've won $25,000 for life. You know, $25,000 a year for life.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, she thought, well, shit, far,
well,
this
no
can't
kidding.
Be real.
Right.
She's like, this can't be real. So she's like, okay, look, someone had to have hacked in my account and they're trying to scam me. So she calls her son and then she calls lottery officials and she's like, hey, someone's hacked my account. I don't know how to fix it. And then, well, shit, far. Because come to find out, it was real.
Wow.
She did win $25,000 a year for life.
She died 2 months later. No. That'd be my luck.
Yeah, that'd be my luck,
well,
too.
Well, what she ended up deciding was she's just going to take the one lump sum payment, because I guess you could do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. You don't know how many years you got at 65.
Right. So she ended up just taking out the one lump sum payment, which was $390,000. Oh, that was really,
in the state of Indiana, you don't have to make it public on who wins either.
Oh, I know.
There's some states that you have to.
Oh, me either.
I'd tell maybe Shane and my closest friends like you, Kim, but there would be signs.
Oh, yeah, there will definitely be signs.
Josh would have everything lifted.
I told Emily.
Because
I haven't seen Josh in years. Someone that looks like him, but his face is much tighter.
He has a Land Rover. I don't know what's going on here.
He's in Paris again.
Our friend Dave, we play the lottery when it gets to be huge, you know, huge wins. And the Powerball this weekend, I think, is like 900 million or something.
Oh, nice.
And we were playing Mega Millions and somebody just hit it and it was over 100 million. And no, it was over a billion. Yes, it was over a billion. Wow. The other one was over 900 and some million.
I've bought a couple scratch-offs, but I've never bought a lottery ticket.
Really?
Mm-mm. That's funny.
Yeah, we play when it gets really big, and we were talking about it the other day because he had gotten tickets, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to call Emily. I'm going to tell her she might as well count on it right now because we're going to win this lottery. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy a piece of land. I'm going to build Emily a house. I'm going to build me a house. You know, we'll all be set.
Oh, look, Josh, she just left us on out.
I didn't know.
She? I'm going to buy me a house.
Not even a snicker, nothing.
No, nothing. Not a thing.
I'm going to hire people to turn that money into more money so I never run out.
Right.
With $100 million or $1 billion, I think if I tried extremely hard, I don't know that I would ever go through that much
money. I'd buy me an island and no one would see me in person for the rest of my days.
If all of a sudden Josh disappears from the podcast, I have no idea where Josh went.
Each of y'all would have a hologram thing for me, and that's how we communicate. Hi, guys.
That's hilarious. There'd be signs.
I literally have the best Wi-Fi in the world.
They say in Indiana, the first thing that you do if you hit the lottery like that is to get a lawyer because you can claim it anonymously.
And, oh, yeah.
That'd be smart.
Yeah, definitely be smart.
I wouldn't tell none of my family.
They'd have to watch for the signs. You'll know it.
Right. The hologram.
I'd be coming at Shane, though. Ha-ha, who has the most money now?
All right, that's all I got.
All right.
All right, well, we'll see you next time.
Talk at you later.
Bye. Bye.